computer. And I think Robbie, can you see my desktop? Okay, so that's showing up as well. Sarah, I don't know what to tell you, except to tell you I don't see you. Right now you're my invisible student. Should I be able to see Sarah?
That's okay.
Oh, it's not okay. Oh, there, now you came on. I was going to say, it's not okay with me. Can we make it so I can see both of them at the same time? Smart people can do that, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know about that.
Give it a try. I've got assistance here, so. That wasn't good. Now there's nobody. Oh, okay. We see their names.
Yeah.
It's a start. What if we unmute them? Would that make them show up?
Yeah, it would not.
Would not do that, huh?
I would not have research.
What would you do any of those things? Manage participants?
Well, that's what I
want. Are we managing them?
That's what I want. That's what
I want. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what else can we do with that? That helps. Here we are. Yep, we are confused.
Well, now I can really see you.
I know, this is great.
That's good.
It's kind like of the first idea, yeah. You know, now you see what I
like it.
You see Jean-Claude and I standing here going, why can we not figure this out?
Well, you know, like sometimes on the view options, well, I don't know if it's the same for you, but like if you, it's like at the top of the screen.
Okay.
You can like minimize it, and sometimes that changes it. I still struggle with it myself, but I'm like, where'd everybody go?
There's an option that was there that's gone.
I thought they used to be one where you can say, like, I want them to all be different tabs, yeah, or right. I don't, that's the one I remember seeing, but that would be a year ago. So, hey, now we got Robbie back. Oh, look at that, you did it.
Is that then what I was looking for didn't come up, it didn't show. I don't know why.
All right. Hey, I can see my two people, they can see me. We're
and
really
you can get out of this.
I can go ahead and X out of that now, yeah. If I need it. Okay. Very good.
That's what I was looking for all along, it just didn't show.
I always think it's magic when you guys make these things work, so trust me. All right. So ladies, how are you this evening?
Good.
Doing well.
Doing all right. Sarah, I was surprised to see you in class. Tell me about what you're doing right now that you've landed in my class.
I know. It's kind of weird, huh?
I was thinking, I remember when our children were toddlers, chasing one another through the dining hall, so.
Yes, I think I landed in your class because I have avoided all other math classes or failed all my other math classes.
Oh no, okay.
So I'm not entirely sure. I know for when I was in nursing school, I did math class, but I don't think it transferred over because of the way it was set up.
One of those.
It was one of those. So Yeah, but it's good because, you know, now our kids are in middle school and high school, and I'm having to keep up with their math, and so I'm actually very excited about
much more skilled, right? Okay.
Yes.
So, ladies, will excuse me for just a moment. This board is filthy, and everything I project is going to look bad as a result. I'm going to go get some paper towels so I can clean the board. I'll be back.
Okay.
Okay, I am back. I wanted to be able to work while I was talking. So Sarah, I want to hear the rest of your story. What degree are you pursuing at this point?
Business, getting the Bachelor of Science in Business.
Okay.
And I graduate May 12th, or as soon as this class is done and you've turned in my grade.
I am your last stop. So you are a highly motivated student when it comes to passing. This is what
Yeah, so I'm taking your math class consecutively with business law. And so both are really good at thinking logically. So I think they paired those together very well.
Okay. Well, when I was looking at who I had in the class and the little bit of information that I had on them, it looked like I had mostly people that would have been classified as freshmen or sophomores that were fairly early in their, you know, studies, which I think is more typically what they expect with this class. But you are not my first person who was taking it and graduating in the middle of the class and, you know, all that.
Right. So I'm interested to see how that's going to work out.
I think the last guy missed one class. He usually came to class, but one week he watched the recording because it was graduation. I thought that was a good reason to miss
class. That is definitely a good reason to miss class.
I mean, gosh. So, all right, let's see. Who have I just added? Christine?
Yes.
Yes. Christine, tell me what you are studying. I'm cleaning the board and getting to know myself at the same time.
I'm a psych major.
Okay. And how far into that are you?
If I can make all the classes now, I'll be graduating next year, May.
All right. Okay. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel. That's a
yes.
Good. Listen, this is no small thing to be getting a degree while doing the rest of life full time and full tilt. So, all right. So Robbie, tell me about your situation.
Well, I am doing an interdisciplinary degree. This is my going into my second year, so I cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel.
You really can't. There's an awful lot left, isn't there?
There is, but that's okay.
It'll come. One step.
It will. Yes, so I'm looking forward to the class. Just, you know, hopefully get the fog off the math.
There you go.
So hopefully I'll get it.
Okay, now I think when we are looking at things on the screen, it will not look so bad. That was pretty horrible.
Well, you do have to think that mostly guys teach in that classroom. So
Well, you know, Gary was in here trying to give me a quick refresher a couple of days ago, and he said, oh my gosh, that board looks terrible. He said, I'll try to find some cleaner somewhere and clean it for you, because they know I really use the board a lot, and a lot of people don't use the board much at all. And I said, oh, I have the right cleaner at school. I can just bring it. So I think he just trusted me to bring it, but then I ran a little bit late, and, you know, Jean-Claude and I were having a little struggle there, so slightly delayed, but now we have it clean. All right, well, let me give everybody credit that I see in class right now, because that's really important. Accurate attendance is a big deal. Christine, now that I see your last name, I recognize that I want to commend you for all of the hard work you have already done in this class. You are my award winner for most determined to pass that practice test on your own. So congratulations, way to go. And I saw that you did it. So good for you. If I could get 100% of my students to put out the effort that you did already, it would be my first time ever where it was all successes, I guarantee.
Christine, did you make the 80 or whatever you had to do to pass?
Yes.
Oh, good.
What you
yes,
have
on the last try, I actually did it.
I'm not sure how many times she took it, but it was many. I'm going to say
that's
she did
awesome.
Not give up. She hung in there and said, I can do this. I'm going to do this.
I just got annoyed that I couldn't get over 75.
Well, I know to be stuck at 75 when you need an 80 is irritating, to say the least. But anyway, I was just super impressed with you and wanted to commend you if you were online tonight. Okay, what I want to do first is look at that requirements and grading section. I'm going to see it in just a minute. There it is. Because it seems like no matter how clear I think this is written, it's not clear for everybody. And it's, you know, 6 weeks class, there's not very much time to be surprised and recover. So, you know, it says at the top, read this carefully and avoid surprises. And I really, really, really don't want anybody to be surprised. So doing your reading and doing some practice problems, you know, that's 0% of my gradebook. I'm not collecting homework and grading it or anything like that. But it's everything towards being able to pass those quizzes. That's where you're going to get the skill to be able to do it. So when I describe in here, and I describe exactly the same process, you know, in a couple other places, that you want to read a section quickly, then you want to go back through it and look at their example problem and go do the practice. Look at their example and go do the practice. And then look through the multiple choice quick quiz. Then go to the next section and do the same thing. I'm really serious about that. I tell my high school students, you read math with a pencil in your hand. You don't just sit and read math. It doesn't do any good. You know, if the only thing that's happening is your eyes are going over the page, then you might as well have been making supper or something. So you've got to actually do problems as you're reading and make certain that you can reproduce those same steps that they're giving you in the book. So then you come to this practice quiz, all right? It's gonna, average of all those practice quizzes, you'll have one every week. But I'm thinking maybe not the last week. I'm not sure though. And those will average together and be 5% of your grade. Your first effort, an honest effort where you score more than 40%, okay, or at least 40%, needs to happen before class starts, all right? So that hasn't happened. You know, I have to say here for everyone involved, I have 15 people enrolled in this class, and I had either 7 or 8 people that had taken this quiz before class started. So 7 or 8 of you are already out of compliance with what is expected. You need to have gotten on, done your reading, done some practice, and taken that practice quiz at least once. Now, having said that, you don't have to achieve an 80. Before I talk about it. But what I need for you to do is be ready to hear what I'm going to hear, and also to come in knowing what you need to know. you know, it seems like this night seems real long. When I'm up here teaching it, I think, well, we never get to 9:30. But it's really a very short period of time to cover as much material as we are. And people have different amounts of backgrounds. Not everyone has, you know, the same information they're working from. So I want to respect your time in preparation, and I want to talk about those things that you need for me to talk about. I won't have time to talk about everything. So when you come and you get in and you do that practice quiz, then you're ready to hear what I'm going to say, and you have informed me of what I need to say. I can look at your practice quiz, I can see what's going well and what's not, and then I can order my my lecture accordingly. So it's extremely important. This is a part of your participation grade decreases by 50% if you don't take that test before class starts. So we need to be really clear about that one. Students are required to attempt the practice quiz, let's see, this is in my way, at least one time before class, okay? Weekly quiz is 15%. Once you hit 80, it automatically goes to a 100. So an 80 is a 100. An 85 is 100. It's going to go to a 100 for the practice quiz. And then the weekly quiz will open. So if you've got a real strong math background, you may be able to achieve that 80 before I ever say a word in class. I would still advise you to wait until after the class meets before you go ahead and take your weekly quiz. Because it's a one-time deal. Whereas that practice quiz has a lot of problems in there, you can just take it again and get different problems. That weekly quiz is the same 10 questions that everybody is going to get. Everybody's 15% is based on the same 10 questions. And if you take it, I can't let you take it again. You've already seen all the answers now. What would be the point? So I would go ahead and wait. You know, I really would, unless there's something really pushing you that week. Our discussion forum, we only do it the first 2 weeks. This week, it's to get acquainted. It's to help me see the background of my students. It's to help you kind of see who's in this with you and how they feel about it. I forgot to go ahead and take account of everybody that was in. Again, I did not have 15 people in like I should have, but I had quite a few. And I forgot to finally count and say how many people really like math and how many people are like terrified and have put this off, but we're finally here. I think we're a pretty good mix, though. I've got a lot of people in both crowds. But that was for me. This upcoming week, during week two, what we will be doing is you're going to put together a post that is your best effort at your first portfolio entry. If we skip down here to our summative grades, there are three. And the third one of those is a portfolio. It consists of several short writings students will work on throughout the first 5 weeks of the course called In Your World. This project must be submitted by the end of week five. And so what we'll do is, this week, we'll all practice putting one of these together. You're gonna take your best shot at it. So you're gonna go there, you're gonna look at what you can work on. Almost every one of these requires you to find a news article, or requires you to do some kind of very quick research. It is not a research paper. I really don't want you to write more than a half a page for me, max. This is not a big writing assignment. It's, I want you to see how the math we talk about and work on intersects with real life. And so each one is saying, go find something in the news this week that has to do with this. Or go find something where they're talking about percentage change. Go find a website and look at what kind of fallacies that they're presenting. What can you identify? My favorite one that nobody has done yet, but I keep hoping somebody will, and it would be appropriate for this week. There is an offering somewhere in chapter one about watch 30 minutes of TV, pay particular whatever you want to watch on TV for 30 minutes, but watch the commercials and take note of what you saw advertised for each one and what kinds of fallacies they were using in order to try to persuade people to buy their product. So when we look, you read those fallacies in 1A, and then you start thinking about commercials, you're going to go, oh my gosh, they really do use that. Appeal to emotion is a huge one in advertising, but it's not the only one. So I keep waiting for somebody to write that up for me because I think it would be fun. So anyway, this week when you post, it will be your first try. And after you post it and I give you feedback and your fellow students give you feedback about it, then you can fix it on up, make it even better than it was,
and put it in as your first submission, and you'll only have 9 left to do. So that's our first 2 weeks in the on the discussion board, and then we're done. It's really just to help us get rolling. Participation, if you talk to me and you know, you can answer questions and you can ask questions, and I know you're alive and breathing still on the other side of the camera, then you're gonna get your participation grade because you're all here live with me. If you watch the recording, then there's questions you have to answer and you have to actually answer them correctly in order to get your participation grade. So it's a bonus for you. All you have to do is make sure I know you're alive and with me tonight and we'll be fine. Spiritual disciplines, I didn't notice that anybody had started their stewardship journal yet the last time I looked. I encourage you to do that. That is the part of this class that's really primarily between you and God, and all I am is an accountability person. If you do it, and I feel like you truly thoughtfully considered what was there, then that is great. You're good to go, all right? I'm just going to give you a couple of, I'll give you a little bit of feedback about your thoughts, and I'll give you credit. The only way I'm going to give you less than 100% credit on your journal is if I feel like you just rushed through and put no thought into it at all. But really, what I want you to do is hear what God has to say to you. You don't really need to hear what I have to say in that particular section. So that is a journaling activity, and I really want to use it as such. And then there's these summatives. We talked about this portfolio that we will be practicing this week as a part of our discussion forum. There are two other assignments that are summatives. Altogether, these three summatives make up 60% of your grade. The one that's going to come due first is test number one. I called it a test because it's a summary grade. But please, let's all look together. It is an open book, short essay test in which students answer 5 out of 8 problems that are presented to you. You can use your book. You can use your class notes. All right? That's all available to you when you're answering those questions. There is absolutely nothing you need to memorize. And there's probably only one question on there that requires any calculation whatsoever. We start out this class by looking at reasoning and logic, and then we'll move into our calculations. And so I use this open book, short essay test to assess what you have gotten out of our discussion of logic and reasoning and problem solving. And 100% of that test, I want you to complete with your book open and you referencing it. So hopefully it's a pretty low stress test. That's your first major assignment that you turn in to me. And then the second one is the portfolio. It comes due at the end of week 5. Those are things that you've put together, not 10 really short pieces, one of which you've tried out and gotten feedback on the forum this week. And then the last one is the one traditional math test, like you would think of a math test from previous classes you've been in. It covers the material in the remaining chapters after chapter 2. So everything we do from the second half of class next week to the end. And there are calculations. You will want to have a calculator that you're familiar with and able to use. And you will take it online. The majority of that test is multiple choice. There's a little bit of free response, but most of it's multiple choice. And it is almost entirely calculations. That's 30% of the course grade right there. So does anybody have questions about the grading and expectations, what it is you're supposed to do each week? Clear?
On that on the second test where it says you need a proctor if you don't take it during class.
Right. So this week we were supposed to read section 1A through 1E. We were supposed to have done chapter 1.
Okay. No, I'm talking about the second test.
That is the material that we are going to talk about this week. That was what was assigned. Also the prologue, and I think the prologue is really important. I hope you looked at it. It had something to do with how you answered your discussion forum question, okay? This class is not intended to be a foundational math class on which you would build college algebra, followed by trigonometry, followed by calculus. I teach all of those things except calculus. I don't teach that one. But this isn't the foundation we're trying to lay here. This is intended to be a math class for people who are not going to go into math intensive careers at all. And rather, what we're looking for is the math that makes us better able to help our children with their homework, better able to select the candidate that really does represent the values that we have, and then just better able to do the financial things that are in our own life, okay? Making those hard decisions about what car, when, how, what investments, when, how, so on and so forth. Clearly in 6 weeks, we cannot look at any of those things in great depth, but we're gonna try to consistently look at it from the point of view of how can I reason through this? What kind of questions do I need to be asking? And what are the major principles involved? What's the foundational math behind some of these things? So we are not trying to pass college algebra. I want some of you to relax about that and know that that's not the goal. Let's see, anything else in this discussion that I feel like we need to look at? And I wanted to open up, I see I have some more discussion forum things that got posted after I quit looking. So I'll have to look at those later. Here we go, submitting items for In Your World portfolio. Let's just take a look at this. Very important, up here at the top, this is a step-by-step, 8 steps. This is how I want you to format each of your submissions. The submission place is looking for 10 submissions because you're going to answer 10 of these. It says choose 10 of the questions below. I think I have more than 20 things for you to choose from. So, you know, pick something that is of interest to you. Don't just pick the first thing because it's the first thing. You know, you do what you're interested in, what's relevant to your life. But you're going to open up a Word document. You're going to copy and paste either, you know, an article or an excerpt from an article. If your article is kind of lengthy, don't, you know, again, this should all fit in one page. So pick an excerpt, the one you want to discuss. Make sure that you put a correct citation about where you found this article. Look at the MLA stuff and make sure you cite your source appropriately. And then you're going to write your answer or your response about this article below it, okay? So your response should not be more than a half page, 12-point type, okay, all of that, not a lot. You're going to briefly describe how it answers this question down here, okay? How does it address this question? So, for instance, let's all go to chapter 1 at the problems in at the end of section B, all right? So let me see if I can even get a page number for you. Page 25. By the way, if you don't have your book, I mean, we live and die by this book. Everything's going to come out of the book. You need a book. This is not the class where you want to try to get by without the book. I had those classes where I bought the book and then I wondered why I never opened it up. That's not this class. Okay, so question 102. Would one of you read that aloud? Who likes to read? No volunteers. Robbie, will you do it?
I need to find, because I have it online, the book, so I need to find it. So if somebody else wouldn't mind, that would be good.
Are you reading to me and I can't hear you?
No. Can you hear me?
Robbie, say hi to me.
Hi.
I can't hear any of you. Are you talking to me too, Sarah?
Yeah, are you on mute?
Unfortunate, because I always like it better when I can hear you.
We can hear you, but I don't think you can hear us.
No, I don't think you can hear any of us.
There it does. Talk to me now, Sarah.
Can you hear us now?
I will have to be able to read lips to figure this out. Okay. I guess you have to listen to me until break, and then I'll try to get Jean-Claude to see if he can get me sound to go with your pictures. But he's teaching a class right now, so I don't want to bother him. Okay, I'll read 102. Find a news article or an editorial in which a conditional statement is used. If necessary, rephrase the statement in standard if P then Q form. Comment on the truth of the individual propositions. Is P true? Is Q true? And then the truth of the conditional proposition. This is the perfect lead-in to where I wanted to start in our conversation, because I noticed online that some of you got really caught up in the truth of the statement and didn't understand that validity does not necessarily mean truth. And so there's a difference between those two, and if we get all caught up in truth, then we miss our question, because the question was, is it valid? And they're looking at that whole PQ thing and what is really going on with that. So to take a look at that, I've got a few PowerPoint slides to try to help us walk through the information that's in 1B, and then we'll come back and talk about what kind of article you might come up with here. Let's see. Okay, there, now you're not on top of the slideshow. That was not what I wanted to do. There we go. I would like to open this. Yes, do that. I've never used Google Slides. I've always used PowerPoint. We'll see how this goes. Hopefully, they're not the same. We can do a slideshow today. Oh, well, never mind. We like them just like they are. Here we go. Well, if I get to move through. Okay, so when we talk about a proposition, okay, it's a statement, it can be either true or false, but it has to be a complete sentence. One thing I noticed on the quizzes, they had a number sentence. I don't remember what it was, but let's say that it said 2 + 3 = 5. Okay, so 2 + 3 = 5 is a complete number sentence. If they had just written 2 + 3, that would have been a phrase, but not a sentence. Okay, in the same way that if I said in the attic is not a complete sentence in English. It's just a prepositional phrase. Okay, so if they had only said 2 + 3 or x + 2, then that would not have counted as a valid proposition because it's not complete. But if you get the left-hand side in the equation and the equal sign in the right-hand side, then it counts. It's a complete sentence. It's just a number sentence. Any statement can be true or false, okay? And then you can set up a truth value system after that, a truth table. When we talk about the negation of a statement, okay? So if my statement is the sky is blue, okay? Then I'm going to say... the sky is blue is a true statement, so if I turn it into the sky is not blue, that's the negation of that statement. And if the statement is true, then its negation is going to be false, okay? If I try to tell you that Paris is in China, then you're going to say, I'm sorry, Ms. Long, that is false. And then if I say Paris is not in China, you would say, yes, you've negated the statement, and now it's true. So negations are just, you know, putting a no or a not or something to make it be the opposite. So then they give us a chance to look at, Amanda is the fastest runner on the team. If I'm going to negate that, I'm going to say Amanda is not the fastest runner on the team. Then it says if the negation is false. So the statement Amanda is not the fastest runner on the team is a false statement, then Amanda is the fastest runner on the team. Does this make sense to everybody? We're good. Nod your head. Remember, I don't read lips very well. There we go. All right. So we're shaking heads or nodding heads. That's all I've got right now. Okay. So then if you do a double negation, you know, in English, this is considered bad grammar. And in logic, it's really considered pretty bad grammar as well. It usually means that you're reading the words of a politician and they're trying to be vague, okay? I'll be honest, anybody trying to be clear would not be using a double negation to communicate. But we know that a lot of times people that are communicating to us, in all honesty, are not trying to be clear, okay? They're trying to be somewhat vague in hopes of keeping everybody happy. And so if that's going on, then the responsibility falls to us to be able to carefully parse the words and the logic to determine what they're really saying, okay? So there could be a double negation. You know, it's not going to be as obvious as not not, but it can be in there. So I think this is a beautiful one. This was in a in the Boulder Daily Camera, okay, in a newspaper, okay? It was an investigation about low-level radiation and cancer from Oak Ridge Laboratory. That's a national laboratory in Tennessee. Okay, so here's the statement that he releases. My opinion is that it's unlikely that there is no association. Okay, that was about as clear as mud. So then they ask the question, does this scientist think there is an association between low-level radiation and cancer among younger workers? And we're going, I don't know what he thinks, actually. But if we look at it carefully, okay, we can see that the scientist says, if I can find his opinion here, my opinion is that it's unlikely. Unlikely is a negative. Okay, not likely would be the same thing as unlikely. There's one negative, and then there's no association. So my opinion is that it's not likely that there's no association. We have a double negative, meaning yes, indeed, he thinks it's going to happen. Okay, so there's the explanation of that. That's exactly the kind of communication we're talking about, that we want to become sharper and better at interpreting because it's all around us. Okay, it's just all around us. Okay, now, besides not, we can connect two propositions or statements with an or an if then, okay? And is sometimes called an intersection or a disjunction, all right? Whereas or is sometimes called a union or a conjunction. When we were getting acquainted, none of you spoke up and admitted to your computer programming skills. Does anybody have any background in computer programming or taken any programming classes? That's a big no for everybody? Okay, well, if you had done so, then this section on and or and if then would be very familiar to you because this is what programmers use in order to get the programs to do what they want them to do. Years ago, I did do a little bit of programming and I taught high school students to program. There is an adventure. And so you had to be real clear about the use of these words and what they meant, okay, because the computer was going to use them in a certain way, okay? The computer uses them in the same way that we do in the study of logic, okay? So when we say and, okay, I want tea and crackers, then I want them both, okay? When I put an and in there, I'm saying both. I want both. And so when we have and, the only time an and statement is true is if both of these statements are true. Okay? Anything short of that is going to be false. So I've got two statements, statement P and statement Q, and each of them may or may not be true. The only way P and Q is true is if they are both true. Okay, then we talk about or. Or is quite different. If I say, you know, somebody says, you want something to drink? And I say, sure. And they say, well, I've got Coke and I've got water. And I say, you know, either would be fine. Okay? Then I'm truly saying, I'll be fine with the Coke. I'll be fine with a glass of water. I'm usually not saying, I want you to bring me two glasses, one with Coke and one with water. Okay? Typically, as a hostess, that's not how I would respond. If somebody said, I'm happy with either one, I would bring them one or the other. That's the difference between inclusive and exclusive, okay? Most of the time when we talk, we mean one or the other, but we don't mean both. So we're talking about an exclusive. I'd be happy to have a Coke, I'd be happy to have water, okay? Inclusive means it could be this one, it could be that one, or it could be both, all right? If I say, my insurance company has fire or theft, my insurance policy covers fire or theft, it's gonna cover both, okay? It's gonna cover both. Okay, so the logic of or a disjunction, P is true, Q is true, then this thing is true. P or Q. Okay, P or Q. But if either one of them is true, it's also true. Because we said or. So if one of them is true, that's enough to make the statement true. The only way this thing isn't true is if both P and Q are false. Pretty sure I have some examples in here if I go far enough. All right, last one in here. The if-then statements. These are the ones that usually get us into trouble, okay? If-then statements. P is the one that comes with if. It is also your hypothesis. It's the thing we generally mention first, or it's the condition. So if the condition or the hypothesis is true, then the conclusion or Q must also be true, or if P, then Q be true. Okay, so if the hypothesis is true, then Q must be true. When we see if the hypothesis is true and Q is false, then we're gonna say that statement is false, okay? But here's the part that we don't like as well. If my hypothesis is false, then no matter what is true or not true about my conclusion, this statement is still a true statement. And this is the one that most of us were like, that does not seem to fit with my intuition. Okay, that doesn't seem to fit with how I think life really works. And we struggle with that one a little bit. We'll try to look at some examples tonight and see if we can clear that up just a little bit more. The first one that I looked at was from page, it was number 10. So if you've still got your book out, go back to page 23. When Sally is depressed, she listens to her iPod. I saw her today listening to her iPod, so she must be depressed. Okay, let me read it again. When Sally is depressed, she listens to her iPod. I saw her today listening to her iPod, so she must have been depressed. Okay. Can you hear one another when you unmute? Can you talk to each other even though I can't hear you? Try it and see. Everybody unmute and talk to one another.
I can hear everybody.
I can hear everybody too.
I can hear.
Are you talking to one another? You hear one another? Excellent. Talk amongst yourself and decide. Do you think that makes sense or do you not think that makes sense?
It doesn't make sense because when she is depressed, she listens to her iPod, but just because she's listening to her iPod doesn't mean that she's depressed.
So it's more like a hasty conclusion that this is what she did, so that's why she must be depressed.
Right. So how does our professor know when we're done talking?
Guess she has to guess. We got the answer.
I think when they were trying to put all of us on the screen, they muted all of us.
Yeah. It's not the first time it's happening.
So, Christine, are you in a hotel room?
Yes.
Are you traveling?
No, I was trying to do this and set up a date night with my husband, too.
Oh, wow. You're brave.
It's a lot quieter here than at home.
Yes, it tends to be that way.
Didn't you move a while ago?
Okay, you yes. Got time to talk to one another.
Can you see what I wrote on the board? Is there writing on the board for you? No one's talking. Can you see the writing on the board? Nod your head yes, shake your head no. This is difficult.
Oh man. This is difficult. Darn it. Can you hear me, ladies?
Yes, thank you. I don't know how you do that, but that's awesome. Yes, we can see the board?
Yes.
Yay! Okay, fantastic. Which one do you agree with, A or B?
Well, I mean, it makes sense.
We had the craziest night ever.
I don't know.
We like A or we like B?
Do y'all know how to write on
Here's
the
board? A.
No.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll write
it. I don't know how y'all did that.
A.
Hey, who's my writer? Raise your hand. Oh, man, Sarah, you've got skills. Okay, that is fantastic. Okay, so we think it makes sense, all right? And here is, to kind of blend this together with what comes later, with the Venn diagrams, let me show you how we can look at a Venn diagram to say, yeah, that does make sense, all right? We have this picture. One circle completely inside of the other circle, okay? So my small circle is the circle that says there is depressed, okay? And because she is depressed, what is she going to do? She is going to escape into her iPod, okay? Now, anytime that she's depressed, she's going to escape into her iPod. Not if you like this so far. Are we good? Are we good? Talk to one another and decide. Yes, has been recorded. We're good so far?
Yes.
Okay. Now here's the deal. Go back to this picture. My then second half of my statement said, I saw her today listening to her iPod. I want to put an X on my picture that represents where we would be if Sarah is listening to her iPod. Okay? So I could put my X here, because inside of depressed is also inside of listening to her iPod. But couldn't I also put my X out here just under listening to her iPod? Isn't it accurate either way if the statement simply says, I saw her listening to her iPod? It could be here, but it could be here. Can I make a determination that Sarah is depressed? I'm going to say no, I cannot. All right? Because we don't know that the only time she listens to her iPod is when she's depressed. We just know that when she's depressed, she listens to her iPod. She may also listen to her iPod when she's happy. She may also listen to her iPod when she doesn't want to hear the people talking around her. There could be a lot of other things going on that we don't know. The only thing we were guaranteed was when she's depressed, she listens to her iPod. Okay? That doesn't mean that every time she listens to her iPod, she's depressed. So actually, this answer would be, this does not make sense. We cannot guarantee that it is true. All right, we cannot guarantee that it is true. Let me erase all this mess, and we'll look at it from another way. Sarah, will you erase yours too for me, please? Sarah? Do you guys still hear me? This worries me. Can you all still hear me? Even when I'm writing, you can hear me? Okay, all right, excellent. It's just a little weird when I can't hear you. Okay, so let's try this another way. Let's let P be Sarah depressed. And let's let Q be Sarah on her iPod. Okay? And now let's look at this from a truth table perspective. Okay? So we're going to have a column for P and a column for Q. And then we're going to have a column for P implies Q. We're also going to need a column for Q implies P. We'll talk about that in a minute. So P might be true or it might be false. Q might be true or it might be false. Okay, and I've got my P's and Q's set up so that each line represents a different situation. The first one is where they're both true. The second one is where the hypothesis is true, but the conclusion is not. This is the same truth table that we see over here. Does this make sense? You see that I'm just producing the same thing again. So we know if P then Q looks like on the slide. We know if they're both true, it's good. If this one is false, then it's false. And, or if this one's true and the second one's false. And then we got true and we get true. Now, what would the statement, if P then Q, be in terms of the sentence about Sarah? If P would be, if Sarah is depressed, then Sarah uses her iPod. The statement, the first statement in the problem in the book is if P then Q. But we said, I saw Sarah using her iPod. That was Q first. iPod. And we said iPod implies depression. So we turned it around. We flipped it the other way. We said if Q, then P. Well, let's look at our truth table. If Q is now the first term, and it is true, and P is also true, then this is going to be true. But if Q is false, and P is true, we're still okay. If Q is true, and P is false, then this one's going to be false, and this one's going to be true. They don't have the same truth table, okay? So I can't just flip my conditional around and say, well, if the first one is true, second one is true too. No, okay? In fact, these are referenced in your book. They named them, okay? One is the conditional and the other is the converse, okay? P then Q is the conditional. And then if you have Q, then P, that's the converse. And if you look on page 21 in the reading, they point out that they are not logically equivalent. Okay? So just because my conditional is true does not make my converse true. It will be true sometimes, but not true all the time. It's not a proof, and not a valid way to determine truth. My argument is not valid. It does not connect it up. Right. All right, I'm going to clear that off. Think. There we go. Okay. And let's look at some other questions in the book as well to just delve into this a little bit deeper. Question number 26. Go to a blank board here. In question 26, it says, the House failed to overturn the veto on a bill that would stop logging. Based on this vote, will logging continue? Okay, so we're looking at question 22, and we are on, I'm sorry, that's question 26. If I can get back to my board, back to my pen, there we go. There we go, section. Okay, so question number 26, I'm on page 23. Talking about negations here, the directions say, explain the meaning of the given statement, which contains a multiple negation, then answer the questions that follow. So the House failed to overturn the veto on a bill that would stop logging. Okay, so my bill, which we'll call statement P, said stop logging. If my bill had gone through, then people would no longer be logging. That's what the bill says. All right. Then it says the House failed to overturn, failed would be one negation, a veto on the bill. That would be another negation. If I veto this bill, that veto is like a no. It says, do not stop logging. And then, if we fail to overturn it, okay, overturning, if we had overturned the veto, we would have gone back to stop logging. The bill would have gone ahead and gone into to play. But because this failed, okay, because it failed, we got a no to this one. And so we did veto it, and therefore, logging is still going to happen. Nod your head, yes or no, are we okay with that one? We're thinking. Vera, do you want to write me a question on the board?
Sarah, can you hear me?
I was going to think about it.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I mean, because on my screen, you're like paused.
Hey, Christine, do you want me to move forward or discuss something else again?
Do you guys understand it?
I thought veto a bill meant to stop a bill. So, and then
right,
she
so
said.
It's the negative.
So it's the negative.
It is. I'm totally lost because of the P's and the Q's and but
oh. You
know, go for it. I'm sorry.
So I'm trying to me it to says it. The House failed to stop the bill that would stop.
You're gonna leave me hanging here. All right. Let's look at another one.
Should I write
I want to look at exclusive versus inclusive ors. Okay. So I'm looking at the section between 39 and 44, still on page 23. Okay, I picked out a couple, 42 and 44, okay? So question 42. The book states, the oil change is good for 5,000 miles for 3 months. Okay, 5,000 miles. For 3 months. So let's think
some options here. Let's try to figure out how we actually interpret this statement. If I drive, let's see, today is April the 13th, I think. Okay, so today's April the 13th. So 3 months later would be April, May, June, July. 3 months is July 13th. Okay, there's our 3 month time span. So let's say that it is June the 13th. And I have driven, I notice, hey, I just hit the 5,000 mile mark. Okay, then my question is this, do I need an oil change or do I not need an oil change? Is it still good because I've got time left? Or is it not still good because I've hit the 5,000 miles? Maybe for the sake of clarity, I should say, I realize I am at 5,020 miles, just so we can say I'm beyond the 5,000. So again, my question is it the time that says I'm still okay, or the mileage that says I'm not okay? Which would you say is true? Okay, number one, I'm still okay because I'm within the time frame, or number two, I need to go have the oil changed because I went too many miles.
Number
two. Giving you a one or a two?
Two. Can she even see us? Oh, there you go.
I got a two from somebody, yay! Show me one or two, those of you that are giving me a visual. I got a two. We're all good? Okay, so I'm going to go back and look at my number two because that's how my mind is. Sorry. One more screen. Nope. That was my screen. Okay, so number two, we need to do an oil change. All right, so we've got exclusive, inclusive, or. I think you understand that one just fine. All right. What else do I have on here? I wanted to talk about 60 and 64. So we got to turn the page. We're going to go to page 24. I think there were some like this on the quiz. And some people were not amused. Okay, so question 60 says, if London is in England, then Chicago is in America. Okay, London in England and Chicago in the US. Okay, London is in England. That's a true statement. Okay, so my hypothesis, my P is true, okay? Because this would be P implies Q, where P is London is in England and Q is Chicago is in the US. Okay, so London in England is a true statement. Chicago in the US is also a true statement. And if P and Q are both true, then P implies Q is also true. So that one we mark as being true. Okay, now on these statements, notice it says, identify the hypothesis, identify the conclusion, and then decide whether it's valid or not. Again, I want to say to you, thinking about the open book test that you will have where you're tested over these things, you can. I expect you to open up your book and look at the truth tables in your book. I do not expect you to memorize these truth tables. You've got a lot of other things on your mind. You don't need to be memorizing truth tables. Just use your book, okay? So you're going, okay, this is a P implies Q. I've got to go find the table for that conditional statement, P implies Q. It's on page 21. Then you look at your statements
and you let your table determine what you're going to say. So in no way am I expecting you to memorize these. So 60, I've got true, true, and on that table, on page 21, if P is true and Q is true, then if P, then Q is also true. It's the first line of the table. Now let's jump to 62. In question 62, if London is in England, it's still my P, okay? But my Q has changed, and now it's a, or no, wait, one of them has changed. I better go back and look. I may have said that wrong. P has changed. P is if London is in Mongolia. Ben and I are not agreeing with how fast you should write. London in Mongolia. Okay, so there's London in Mongolia, kind of. Okay, I think there's supposed to be an N over there that didn't get in there. And then we still have Chicago in the U.S. Okay, so there's my P. My P is London in Mongolia. My Q is still Chicago in the U.S. Well, we already know Chicago's in the U.S., so my Q is true. Pretty certain London is not in Mongolia, so that one is false. So I have P is false, Q is true. I'm back on page 21, okay? I'm constantly using the table. On page 21, all right? We're not trying to become experts in logic. We just want to understand how it works, okay? So I've got if P is false and Q is true, that is 1, 2, 3, the third line on that table. And when I go over under if P, then Q, lo and behold, it says this is a true statement. And these were the ones that most of you were missing on your quiz. You don't like that because we're like, but London is not in Mongolia. That is true. We're not saying London is in Mongolia. That part of the statement is false. But if your hypothesis is false, then your conditional is true no matter what. All right? Look at where P is false. And under the conditional, if P then Q, it's always true. So if you've got a hypothesis that's false, you're guaranteed to have a conditional that is true, even if it sounds crazy. I think the one of the ones that was on your practice quiz was something about movie stars and something. I remember reading it and thinking I should be a movie star by now based upon this statement. It hasn't worked out. Last one that I was going to look at was 66. If butterflies are birds, then butterflies can fly. Okay? If butterflies are birds, then butterflies can fly. Okay. Well, if butterflies are birds, butterflies are birds. That's my P, statement P, and it is definitely false. We're all clear on that. Butterflies are not birds. Then butterflies can fly, okay? Well, it turns out butterflies can fly, but who cares? Because once we start with the false, my statement is automatically true, okay? So it's similar to the one that came before it. So this is how you would go about using your truth table to determine how some of these things are going to work. Okay, can we move out of 1B? Does anybody have a question from section 1B that they would like for me to do? Anything at all? No? You're good, Robbie? You're good, Christine? Okay. Sarah, did you get a book, by the way, or some copies or something? Is that a yes or a no? Kind of, sort of? Okay. All right. You should call or text me later and see if we can square that up. I sent you a note about that. I haven't checked my messages. You might have answered me.
Okay, so I am going to say this is a done deal. All right, and we are going to try to X out of this set. No, that's not what I want to do. There we go. All right. So let's go to 1C about Venn diagrams and sets. Watch my time too. Okay, doing all right. Okay, here we are. This is where they start bringing in the Venn diagrams. How many of you were brand new to Venn diagrams? Wave your hand at me if you had never used a Venn diagram before. Okay, Robbie, that's not unusual. I frequently have students in my classroom use Venn diagrams, so I have not heard of this. It's okay. They're a pretty easy concept. They're a very visual way to represent something. I am a real visual thinker myself, so I'm a big fan of Venn diagrams. Now, people that are more thinking words or thinking abstract ideas, they maybe don't love Venn diagrams as much. Venn diagrams are really for that visual learner in particular. Really does help them. Okay, so you've got a set of objects, and then all the members of the set are within it. So you can list it in braces, and you can use dot, dot, dot for it to go on, and you know all of that. Or you can use your Venn diagram to show who's in there and who's not. So let's just look at a few of these really basic ideas that we are familiar with. Mammals and non-mammals and whales, okay? The set of whales is a subset of all the set of mammals, okay? Whales are mammals. They have to come to the surface to breathe. They are not fish, okay? So whales do belong in that inside the mammals, okay? Every whale is a mammal. There's no whale out here that's not a mammal. They're all in here. So this is how this particular graph works. It shows that to us, okay? Now, what would be out here in this gray area? Well, things that are not mammals, okay? That's where my fish are gonna be. That's where the turtle is gonna be, okay? That's where the snake is gonna be. Things that are not mammals are out here. On the inside, everything that is a mammal is in the blue. It's a mammal, but it's not a whale, okay? So my dog goes there, my cat goes there, okay, so on and so forth. This is how the Venn diagram works. So it just divides up all living things. Basically, this diagram lets us have three categories: things that are not mammals, things that are mammals, and specifically things that are whales, okay? Inside my whales category, I could have blue whales, I could have great white sharks because they're actually whales, blah, 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 okay? Let's look at one. Here's a situation, fish and mammals. Fish is disjoint from the set of mammals. No fish is a mammal, okay? So we see no overlap. These are two completely separate categories. Now again, this brownish region, it's also a category. Okay, it's the category of all other animals that aren't fish and aren't mammals. So again, my snake is out there, my turtle is out there, okay, that butterfly is out there, so on and so forth. Okay, so then we get to questions like this. The set of doctors and women are overlapping. The doctor that I see is a woman. She would be right here. All female doctors are in the overlapping area. Who is over here in the pink? Women like myself and probably all of you who are not doctors. Okay, who's over here in the blue part of the doctor region? Well, that's the doctors that are men. Okay, so then who's out here in the khaki region? That's the men. Notice not women, because women are all in the pink. This is where the men are who are not doctors. Women who are not doctors are here. Women who are doctors are here, okay? So these Venn diagrams just try to give everybody a place, okay? and help us organize our thinking in a very visual way. All right, so we go on down. Categorical propositions then have the structure of a complete sentence. Always in logic, we need a complete sentence. One set appears in the subject, the other set appears in the predicate. For example, in the proposition, all whales are mammals. Whales is your subject, and that's the subject set, and then mammals comes at the end. Are mammals is the predicate set. So we usually use the letter S for subject and P for predicate, all right? And we assume the subject usually comes before the predicate. It's not a guarantee. Okay, all S are P. All whales are mammals. So there it is, inside of the mammals. No S are P. No fish are mammals. Here's this one, okay? Again, S, in this case, is the fish. No fish, that's the subject, are mammals. Mammals is the predicate, so it comes second. Up here, all whales, that's your S, are mammals. So the S is inside here, S is beside here. Some doctors are women, all right? So S is the doctors because it comes first, it's the subject. Are women is the predicate, it goes over here. Some teachers are not men, okay? So I'm still gonna have a circle for teachers and a circle for men, and then the not men that are teachers are over here, okay? So the teachers that were men are here, the teachers that are not men are out here, that's where they put their circle, or I mean their X inside that part of the circle. The blue and the pink kind of, you know, to help us out a bit. Okay, so now we have a statement. Some dogs can swim. So some dogs are animals that can swim. Some dogs is my subject, so S is gonna be dogs. And then animals that can swim is my predicate, so that's gonna be my set P. Now it says some, so I need an overlapping region, but not either one entirely in the other. So my region for dogs overlaps with my region for animals that can swim, and the dogs that can swim are this overlapping region. So that's where they put their X. Okay, so then they're gonna start talking about these two-way tables. This study was designed to learn whether a pregnant mother's status as a smoker or a non-smoker affects whether or not she delivers a low or normal birth weight baby. The table shows four numbers which correspond to the four possible combinations of the baby's birth weight status and the mother's smoking status. So this is an interesting thing. We've got a two-way table that has four pieces of information. The two-way table would look like this. So we could have smokers and non-smokers. And we could have low weight and we could have normal weight. And so we really have four regions there, four numbers that would come into play in this table. All right, let me see. I'm going to go back to my cursor. I can move forward. Okay, it's like I'm lost. Okay, they just don't give us the table. So I guess I need to draw my table. Let me put it back. There it is. Okay, so we have numbers in each of these categories, but they don't seem to have given us these numbers. I think this example is in the book. Let me see if I can quickly find it so we can have the numbers. Here we go, page 35. So on page 35, we actually see their Venn diagram, and it's got numbers in it, and the table was to the left on page 34. Smokers had, there were 18 low birth weight babies and 132 normal. So for smokers, this was 18 and 132. My table is not aligned the way theirs is, but I am not going to rewrite it. Okay, and then for the non-smokers, it was 14 and 186. Okay, it's always good when you're looking at a table of data like this to see if your two groups are the same size or not, because this does impact, you know, how much sense the problem makes. So 132 plus 18 is 150, okay? They studied a group of 150 smokers, whereas they studied a group of 200 non-smokers, okay? So we have got 25% more people in the non-smoker group, and still they have fewer low birth weight babies. When I first looked at this data, I was like, well, that's a lot closer to being the same than I thought. And then I realized, oh, the two groups aren't even the same size. So actually, it's not as close as you would think. All right, so we've got these two groups. Now notice how they fill these numbers into the problem. The 132 for the smoking mothers, okay, that's the normal birth weight, because the other category is low birth weight, and that's where we put smoking mothers' low birth weight. That's the overlap between those two groups. Low birth weight babies that were from non-smoking mothers are up here in the pink. So there's our 14, there's our 18. Low birth weight babies, we have 14 with the non-smoking moms, 18 with the smoking moms. Smoking mothers with normal weight birthdays, birth weight babies, there's 132. And then here's that 186. It's out here in the brown. Oftentimes, when I ask my students to construct a Venn diagram, and this is one of the things you can do for your portfolio this week, I give you a website that'll make a nice, pretty Venn diagram easily for you, and it'll give you a table of data and ask you to create your Venn diagram. Sometimes students have difficulty knowing how many circles they need, okay? Because when we look at that table, we see that there are, if I can get it back, there it is. We see that there are four pieces of data, and so they're like, how's two circles going to give me four spaces? Well, blue, overlap, pink, and the outer edge. There's your four areas. So four pieces of data fits perfectly in a two-circle Venn diagram, okay? You do not need any more circles than that. If you've got more information, then you sometimes need more circles, and we'll look at some like that. Okay, so then go ahead and discuss this problem some more. Here is the one about blood type, okay? Now, blood type, you can be A, you can be B, you can be AB, you can be O, so there's four types, but then every one of those can be plus or minus. So now we're actually talking about eight categories. Okay, there are actually eight possibilities for what your blood type is. We need more circles, okay? This example is at the bottom of page 35, and here they give us both their numbers, and here's their percentages, percent of the population that falls into each of these categories, and then here it is represented on the Venn diagram. Now notice on a Venn diagram, the fact that there's a lot of pink here doesn't necessarily mean that there's a lot of people there. That's only 2% of the population, okay? You just put your numbers wherever you want. You don't worry about the relative size. This 2% of the people are B negative, okay? Here's A negative. Here's O positive. Everybody in here is positive in this orange circle. Here's the O positive. Here's the A positive, here's the B positive, and then where three of them overlap, that's the AB positive. Okay, so everybody in the orange circle has positive, and we can see one, two, three, four spaces, so we can get all four blood types. Over here, everybody in the pink circle has some kind of a B and a negative sign. No, it's just B, sorry, that's some kind of B. So here's the B negative, here's the AB negative, when it overlaps with the positive, here's the B positive, and here's the AB positive. So pink circle is B, O is positive circle is orange, blue circle is A. All right, out here, O negative people. They aren't B, they aren't A, and they aren't positive. They cannot go in any of these circles, so they are the group that's represented outside. Okay, they look like they're outside of the whole thing, but they're just another category. So this is a representation of that. I want us to work on one ourselves, okay? So look at page 38. And I want this to go with question number 64. How many people at the conference are employed men without a college degree? So I want us to think about our circles here. Okay, this circle is women, this circle is employed. Okay, we're thinking about employed men, and we also want them, where was that? To not have a college degree. So since they don't have a degree, they can't be in this circle. Since they're men, they can't be in this circle. But because they're employed, they can be in this circle. All right? So we need the number that's out here just in the employed circle, but not in any other circle. And I believe that that number, let's erase that table because we're done with it, is shown in our textbook to be 6. All right, does everybody see what I'm talking about there? Their Venn diagram is at the very bottom of page 38, at the bottom of the left-hand column, and we're kind of rebuilding it on my slide here as we go. So how many people at the conference are employed men? I believe it's this number 6. They are employed, they don't have a degree, and they are not women. They can only be in that circle. How many people at the conference, I'll go back to A because I skipped and started at B, sorry about that. Part B, how many people at the conference are unemployed women? Unemployed women. Well, if they're women, they have to be in the women's circle. They've got to be somewhere in there. Okay? They're unemployed, so they cannot be in this circle over here. They're up here, but they're not down here. Can they have a degree? Maybe, right? It didn't say. It does not specify. So I believe unemployed women are going to be both in this area right here and in this area right here, because neither of those areas includes employed. One does include a degree, one would not include a degree. So I believe we need those two numbers, which on our table is 20 and 4. This is a 4, and this is a 20. And so I would say that the answer to that question is there are 24 unemployed women. 20 of them have degrees, 4 of them do not have degrees. But all 24 are unemployed. Then the next question they ask us is how many people at the conference are unemployed men without a college degree? Okay, so if they're unemployed, they're not in the bottom circle. If they're men, they're not in the left circle. And if they do not have a college degree, they are not in the right circle. So when we're talking about how many people at the conference are unemployed men without a college degree, we're talking about the group that does not fit inside of any of these circles. It has to be our number that's clear on the outside, which would be the 3. Okay? Those 3 people do not fit in the employed group. They do not fit in the group of women. They do not fit in the group of people who have a degree. That's who we're talking about here. So there are 3 of these people at the conference. And then the last one is how many people are at the conference all together? If I want to know how many people are at this conference all together, then I'm going to have to add up every number that's on this diagram. I'm not going to go ahead and write all of them in, but I am going to see if I can get control back to my computer. But I'm going to encourage you to add up every number that's on that Venn diagram in your book, bottom of page 63, and see what you get. I'm not going to bring a calculator tonight because I didn't think I would need it. So now you have to use my phone.
Thank you.
Okay. That's the number I got. Yay, Sarah, you make me feel good. I was like, I wonder if I forgot one in here somewhere. Okay, 77. I think it's 77. Sarah thinks it's 77. Anybody want to disagree strongly with us? We're good? All right. So if we had everybody at the conference, is everybody represented on here? Because this thing was labeled people at the conference. And so we have to add them all up in order to get that. All right, let's try one more, and then we're going to take a break. This one is number 38 in your textbook. So go back to page, or I'm sorry, it's number 62. It's on page 38. Number 62. Tomatoes and Cancer. Harvard Medical School, February 17th, 1999, reviewed 72 previous studies of the effect of tomatoes on cancer. The data showed convincingly that high consumers of tomatoes and tomato products are at substantially decreased risk of numerous cancers, although probably not all cancers. Consider the following table that shows the incidence of oral cancer for a group of people who ate an average of one tomato a day, and another group of people who ate fewer than three tomatoes per week. Draw a Venn diagram for the data. So when we look at their table, we see that we've got four numbers on this table. So remember we talked earlier, if you've got four numbers, four categories, then a two-circle Venn diagram is going to work for you, all right? Because you're going to have this region, you're going to have the overlapping region, you've got this region over here, and then you've got this outside category that doesn't fit anywhere else, okay? So what we need to figure out is, where do we want to put the four numbers that are in our table on this particular Venn diagram, okay? So I'm going to give you a minute to sketch, okay, in your mind, you're on a scrap of paper, something you've got in front of me. Sketch what you think is true, and then I'll put up what I think is true, and we'll see if we agree.
All right, how do we feel about the way I've labeled this diagram? We have thumbs up, the thumbs down. Okay, here we go. I'm getting a verbal response. Thank you. Robbie, thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you like my numbers?
I had some.
Robbie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Now can you hear me? Yes? Okay, so Robbie, did you like my numbers or not? Yes, that's a thumbs up. Okay. Christine, thumbs up. Yes? Okay. Sarah, I had a hard time saying where to put the 164. That's the one that goes outside of the whole thing, right? Didn't get cancer, didn't eat a tomato a day, all right? That's the thing that's not in either circle. That is usually the hardest number to place. We kind of forget about that region, okay? But it's your fourth region, all right? I'm either in one circle, the other circle, both circles, or no circle, okay? No circles is an option. All right, let's take a break, all right? I'm gonna try to find out how to hear you all because that would be just fantastic for me if I could. So I show that it is, let me see, 7:42. Let's reconvene at 8 o'clock, all right? I'll give you a little bit longer break tonight because we started at 6. And I'll see what I can do. I'm sitting on break, so I'm not sure that we can fix this right now.
I have my dinner downstairs.
Sarah's there. Maybe we can talk to Sarah.
Sarah's here. Okay.
Yeah. Sarah? You hear me? Yes? Okay, great.
Yes.
I've got SoundCloud here trying to get sound back. So will you give us feedback from time to time? Try talking to us.
Sure. I can tell you I got that book.
Okay.